We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Every year, the fantasy football community gets rightfully excited about the incoming rookie class. However, aside from rookies that broke out the prior year, we're often guilty of casting aside players who underperformed in their rookie season. Now, sometimes writing those players off, it's justified. Other times, those second-year players can come at a deep discount in fantasy drafts. Today, on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, we'll talk about those second-year players. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by On Demand DFS, where you can draft your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. I'm Jim Coventry, always joined by Anthony Servino. We'll be doing a podcast on this platform every Monday. Remember to follow Anthony at The Real NFL Guru, and you can find me over at Jim Coventry NFL. Today's show, we're going to include Anthony and I going over the quarterbacks and running backs of the 2023 draft class. So players with a year under their belt. Anthony, we're going to start with the quarterbacks and the 101, Bryce Young. Yes, the Carolina Panthers are probably saying, man, wish we could have had that one back. Here are a few things I noticed before I turn over to you, Anthony, about Bryce Young. So Bryce Young only had two fantasy performances over 16 points, which is a horribly low threshold. Two, in week five, he took 41 pass attempts against Detroit, three touchdowns. So he got over there. In that game, intercepted twice, only 247 yards. So it wasn't even a good game. Week 16 against the Packers, that crazy shootout. Packers didn't defend anybody. And Bryce Young has the game of his season, 312 yards and two touchdowns. Otherwise, he was 195 yards or less in nine of his last 10 games. Completed less than 60% of his passes in six of those nine games. Horrible numbers. Now, like we said, Young had five games of 200 yards, but those were in weeks 4 to 8 consecutively. So he had a little run, but then film gets out. You get figured out, not good. Now, look, he didn't have a line. The line was horrible. The two tackles, Taylor Moton, Ikem Ekwonu, underperformed. They could bounce back. Interior line was a disaster. In the offseason, they bring in Robert Hunt from the Dolphins, a great guard. They added other help along the line, not as solid, but they've improved it. They do need their tackles to bounce back. They add Deontay Johnson because the receiver room stunk, Anthony. Basically, it was an old Adam Thielen, Jonathan Mingo, not much else. So they do get Deontay Johnson. All that said, Dave Canales is the offensive coordinator. He wasn't the play-action king in Tampa. 22nd, pre-snap motion near the bottom. I'm worried that these things don't help Bryce Young. How are you handicapping Bryce Young in year two?
I'm not in love with Bryce Young. I wasn't in love with Bryce Young coming out. I think CJ Stroud probably should have been the 101 in last year's draft. And it wasn't a great season at all for Bryce Young. There's not a lot of good. When I'm going back and watching the film, there's not a lot of good to grasp onto. Now, the situation, as you said, was terrible. They did their best to improve offensively. They had some key losses on defense, which means they might have to score a little bit more. But can they score more? And if that happens, it's going to have to be on the shoulder and back of Bryce Young. I like the addition of the wide receiver, Deontay Johnson. The running back room is mid with a little bit of upside, but not much. You know, their best, I guess, receiving tight end was Hayden Hurst, and that's not saying much.
No.
He's out of town. I don't know what to think about this Panthers offense right now. I think it could be run-centric despite bringing in Canales because I just don't believe in this wide receiver group. How can you drop Bryce Young back enough to bring fantasy relevance with Deontay Johnson and probably Adam Thielen as your two best guys?
We have to hope that in the draft they're able to get somebody else. But I said all along when Bryce Young got drafted, it's not just the height. It's the height and the weight, durability. But the height, seeing in the middle of the field in a league that specializes in zone defense, that's a problem. And that's something that Bryce Young is going to have to really be an outlier to be able to overcome that and become even a good quarterback. And like you said, weapons are a problem. So in fantasy drafts, look, he is a quarterback three. That's what he is. If somebody believes there's this great breakout and you believe in Bryce Young's talent, then fine. Make a little reach up for him. If you believe in him, I think I can safely say Anthony and I, we are very skeptical, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not even much of a rushing floor if you go back and look at his rushing numbers. We can't even hang our hats on that type of a floor in fantasy.
So let's move to C.J. Stroud. He was the second pick in the NFL draft in 2023. And look, we know what we saw. We saw a superstar. We saw an incredible rookie season. But I'll tell you what, it wasn't quite what we think the narrative was. Yes, it was beautiful. Let's go over a few things to kind of understand the full picture. He had 300-yard games six times. Now, C.J. Stroud, none of those 300-yard games came in his last six. Now, Tank Dell was out. I get that. But film was out on Stroud. They did have a couple tougher opponents. Now, of those 300-yard games, four of those six came in weeks 9 to 12. And that was his only easy stretch of the season. He had defenses that were the 22nd to 29th against quarterbacks during that stretch. So he and it's fine. It's okay to clean up against bad opponents. In five games, including the playoffs, C.J. Stroud played top 10 defenses. Stroud had zero touchdowns in four of those five games. Now, the playoff game against Cleveland, that was the exception. He had three touchdowns. The game plan took Cleveland and just threw him aside. Finally, I pointed out earlier, it should be noted, Tank Dell was out down the stretch. That's important. But Stroud, he only had one game with more than two touchdown passes. That was the five-touchdown game against Tampa. But for fantasy, Stroud had four games of 25 fantasy points. Now, 25 is a strong fantasy game. So there are only four of those. Now, Bobby Slowick's the offensive coordinator. Scheme people open. It's year two. He could get better or the league could catch up on him. What are your thoughts on C.J. Stroud as a fantasy asset and how he should be ranked in his second year?
Well, I like C.J. Stroud. He did provide, if you go back and look at the tape, a lot of good film and a lot of good things we can hang our hats on. Did the production fall off a little bit? Sans Tank Dell. Absolutely. What I love what this team did this offseason, they retained their guys like a Dalton Schultz. I believe they retained Noah Brown. And of course you have Dell and you have Nico Collins. They upgraded the running back position massively with Joe Mixon, who can also catch the ball. So top to bottom, I love this offense, and I love C.J. Stroud going into year two. What I'm a little bit, I guess, what I'm pumping the brakes on, he's currently, I believe, the sixth quarterback off the board. Allen, Hurts, Mahomes, Jackson, Burrow, Stroud. Does Stroud belong as the sixth quarterback off the board right now? That's where I'm pumping the brakes. I don't know if I'm willing to pay this price for C.J. Stroud because as good as Tank Dell and Nico Collins played, as well as they played, are they elite? And a lot of these other quarterbacks, maybe outside of Josh Allen and Mahomes, who's an Aller, they all have elite receivers in one form or another or the high rushing upside, and Stroud has neither.
Yes. The rushing yardage is huge with fantasy quarterbacks. And I go back to the number. As great as Stroud was last year, one game with more than two touchdowns. That's not an elite fantasy quarterback. He was an elite NFL quarterback by many measures. But that end of the season, those non-pop games, and you're going to pay that high of a freight. Yeah. I think the fantasy community is paying for the NFL player, not the fantasy player, because we know what we see. We know we see star. And I know many viewers and listeners are maybe too young to remember this. Troy Aikman was an outstanding quarterback, but he was not a good fantasy quarterback because that team ran a lot. That was a different reasoning than Stroud. But sometimes on rare occurrences, it doesn't line up. Like you, Anthony, I think Stroud for fantasy is going to be overdrafted, but for real NFL, he is the real deal. All right, Anthony Richardson is next, and he was picked with the fourth pick of the 2023 draft. Well, he played four games, and in two of those games, Anthony Servino, Richardson was knocked out after 17 snaps and knocked out after 21 snaps. And in a third game, with a couple minutes left, he took an injury in that game late. We don't know if he would have returned or not. So realistically, though, four games, three injuries. The last one was a season ender to his shoulder. That has to be concerning. Now, look, two full games he played. Richardson scored 25 and 29 fantasy points. That is probably like the big game output almost that C.J. Stroud had on the entire season. Yeah. And he did it in two full games. And in the one game he had 17 snaps, Anthony Richardson still had 18 fantasy points. This guy is a monster scoring fantasy points. And the team, the Colts, Shane Steichen, used three receiver sets. Their roster had said otherwise. They only had four receivers on opening day and a bunch of tight ends, but they went in with 11 personnel. Well, Anthony Richardson would benefit from that because you see less heavy boxes with three receiver sets. Also, don't forget, Richardson never played with Jonathan Taylor, and having that run threat on that team, teams view you a lot different with Taylor than they did with Zach Moss. So what are we expecting from Anthony Richardson in year two, and are we worried about the injuries?
You always have to worry about injury, but it's still too early for me to label Anthony Richardson as injury prone and then build that into my analysis. What I'm going to say about Anthony Richardson is where C.J. Stroud is being drafted, Richardson's being drafted as a QB8, Stroud the QB6. I'm willing to flip-flop those two because unlike Stroud, Richardson does bring the high rushing floor. Richardson had four touchdowns, and what did he play? Four total games.
That's it.
Stroud in a full season had three, and Richardson almost had as many rushing yards in those few games as Stroud has all year. And when it comes to supporting cast, Michael Pittman, I think Michael Pittman, it's safe to say, would be the best wide receiver on the Texans today. They also have Jonathan Taylor, who at this point of his career, light years ahead of Joe Mixon. So I like the supporting cast around Richardson better. I even like Steichen. I think Steichen is an up-and-coming offensive mind. The system's there. Like it's all there for Richardson. And he's the second-year quarterback I'm willing to spend up on. Because if he stays healthy for a full season, we're talking top three quarterback ceiling.
Steichen has been an offensive mastermind since his days with the Chargers. That may have been in San Diego. It may have been that long ago. Steichen crafts an offense like few other coaches. And that I'm glad you mentioned that because it is a massive benefit for Anthony Richardson to have that level of coaching. We saw Gardner Minshew, not for fantasy, but from an NFL standpoint, hold up and play well for a full season. And he was always Gardner Minshew, the player that dropped off after a couple games. Steichen kept him relevant the whole season. So, yes, Steichen is an underreported part of this, but he's a big deal. And like you, if you're willing to take the risk on the potential injury, because, again, he got knocked out of three or four games, that upside is right near the top of the league. Maybe after Josh Allen, maybe after Jalen Hurts, but he's not far after that. So that is a risky pick, but it's a big upside pick. Anything else on that?
Is he the type of player, because, you know, to give us the type of season Lamar Jackson gave us in his year two, which was, as you know, MVP-like, big pop numbers. Is that within the realm of possibility for Anthony Richardson? Considering I would take the supporting cast around Richardson, the play caller, over what Lamar had.
You're right. Greg Roman was a millstone in some ways around Jackson, even though Jackson overcame it in that 2019, I believe, season.
Yes.
Yeah. And that said, Jackson did come into the NFL as a better passing prospect than Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson was seen as a boomer bust passer. Now, maybe he figured it out. And that's the thing we don't know with four games, right? If he figured it out, oh my goodness, you're right. That type of season is in the cards. I still don't know what we have as Anthony Richardson, the passer, because there was no film on him, right? And they didn't know what Steichen was going to do. And I think the whole league, and myself included, we expected heavy personnel, and I think they caught the league off guard in those early games. So there's a lot of variables with Anthony Richardson. But like you said, Anthony Servino, there is a lot to be excited about, and they're in the range of outcomes. There is that monster season to be had. Love that insight on that. Will Levis is the next and last quarterback we'll cover. He was drafted with the second pick of the second round by the Tennessee Titans. Now, I viewed Levis as a little more of a project. We knew he had the big arm, but I just thought the refinements in his game, I thought the accuracy wasn't what we needed it to be. So when he comes in, let's talk about Will Levis a bit. Now, first of all, he will have a new coach. Last year, Tim Kelly was the offensive coordinator. They do bring Brian Callahan in from Cincinnati with Sean McVay tree. And we don't know how much that will be integrated, but that certainly is way better than what Levis had. We know that in addition to an aging DeAndre Hopkins, we also have an aging Calvin Ridley, but that is a nice set of receivers, Chigi Okonkwo with tight end. And they do bring in Tony Pollard with Tyjae Spears. So they do have a number of weapons. In terms of the offensive line, still not going to be good. It wasn't a disaster last year, but it was way below average. They did sign center Lloyd Cushenberry, who was a very good center. That's going to help a little bit. Now, Levis, his inaccuracy, 26th percentile. He was bad. 21% of his passes were bad. A 1 in 5 passes, uncatchable. So that's a real problem. And the other thing was the Titans knew he had a big arm. So his average depth of pass, 99th percentile. So those are low percentage passes anyway, but it was understood that was what Levis did best coming in the league. And we remember that first game in week 8, he throws 4 touchdown passes. Well, guess what? In the next 8 games, he only threw 4 more. So he threw the same amount of touchdowns in one game that he threw in his last 8. And he passed for fewer than 200 yards in half his games. Now, there's a lot of dysfunction in Tennessee, but I still think Levis is a project. But he has weapons. So what are your thoughts on Levis?
I like the upgrades all over the place offensively with player personnel. I obviously like the coaching personnel that they brought in. What this tells me is that, hey, the organization is behind Will Levis. They see enough here where they're going to go surround him with the right tools to become successful, or hopefully become successful. Looking at Will Levis's efficiency metrics, what he does best, you mentioned a big arm. He was number 2 amongst qualifying quarterbacks when it comes to deep ball, catchable deep ball rate. So he can complete the deep pass, and they did go get another receiver who can go and get it, but he has to develop the rest of his skill set to become a complete quarterback. I don't know how far I'm willing to buy into Will Levis, but the good thing, his ADP isn't going to be that high. He's the type of quarterback to where if you're looking at a cheap best ball stack, you can probably stack a few members of this Titans offense, and it's not going to cost you a lot.
Exactly. I am not excited about Will Levis as a fantasy player. I do think there's a world where he is flamed out of the league or he's a backup for many years. I don't think he's a long-term starter. I think those developments that he needs in his game, I don't know that they're going to be there. They certainly can, and he could surprise us. I even think, like, remember, Desmond Ridder had weapons. Desmond Ridder had Drake London, but he had bad coaching, so there's that. But I am not excited about Levis. But if you're drafting him as a third quarterback, you know, in a best ball league, all right, fine. You need a third quarterback. There's a world where things break, right? But that said, like you mentioned, Anthony, the deep game is what he had. But the more he played, the more defense started putting a deeper shell saying, okay, beat us underneath. And I remember Pittsburgh did that to him. Mm. And it was a real problem. He put up some garbage numbers, but it was really like, okay, you're not going to do this. And so we'll see. The league made an adjustment now. Does he have anything back? And can Brian Callahan, the coach, cook up something? But Anthony and I are not super optimistic on Will Levis, but there is potential. He does better than we think. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with their revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to talk trash with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds. Invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Anthony Servino, we are on to the running back class of 2023. Bijan Robinson was taken with the 8th pick by the Atlanta Falcons. Many draft followers were incredulous that we were using that high a draft capital. Remember Saquon Barkley going super early in a draft about 5 or so years ago and just saying it just never is worth it taking a running back that high. But he's on the Falcons. His first season, 976 yards on the ground, almost 500 through the air. So that was a very nice boost. But Bijan Robinson was done no favors by Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith had a successful rushing attack in 2022. He didn't make the adjustments to attack NFL defenses with their defensive adjustments in 2023. So Bijan Robinson was not the most efficient version we would have liked to have seen. We thought he could have exploded for more. Now, all that said, he only had 20 carries, Bijan Robinson, just one time. In 13 games, it was 15 or fewer. So he was not heavily used. And his receiving usage, very uneven. First 6 games, it was 4 to 6 receptions in almost every game. Ends up with 26 grabs. But then in week 7 to 14, a total of 9 catches. So he basically disappeared from the receiving game. Didn't really get that. But then it was like they changed course. End of the year, a pair of 7 catch games, 23 catches in the last 5 games. And he had all 3 Bijan Robinson of his 50-plus yard receiving games during that late season usage. So it was like they figured it out. They went away from him, and then they finally figured it back out. Now the coaching staff's gone. Here's what I want to point out. Zach Robinson is the new offensive coordinator, comes over from the Rams, was assisting Sean McVay. And last year, we saw the duo downhill run scheme that McVay used to make Kyren Williams a superstar. Well, Bijan Robinson is worlds more talented. Yeah. If Robinson brings in the duo scheme, I don't think the league is going to make an adjustment on it this year. Robinson, if he's used heavily, if they use duo and they use him as a receiver, could he be the RB1 this year?
It's within the range of outcomes, right? I don't think many are going to draft him as the overall RB1 when you have CMC and probably Saquon in that conversation, maybe even Breece Hall. But the ceiling is there for Bijan Robinson. This is another player. The Falcons did everything right with the quarterback, the additional weapons, the offensive coordinator. And this is the year where we see Bijan Robinson break out. He was the RB9 in PPR overall, but when it comes to a per-game basis, only the running back 17, giving us 14.5 fantasy points per game. We did not pay first-round draft capital for that. So some fantasy managers who may have rostered Bijan might be scared off, but this is the year to pounce. Bijan still did a lot of good things, right? 5th in weighted opportunities, 3rd most targets, number 1 running back in routes run. Still efficient, 12th in yards created per touch, 5th in yards created. Like, he checks off all the boxes. We know the workout metrics coming out of the combine, it's all there. It's just about the usage at this point. And I think it's coming this year. I think that juggernaut season that some thought we would get last year, I think it's coming hot and heavy in 2024.
I think one of the biggest benefits for Bijan Robinson is that they have Kirk Cousins. They have Drake London. Yeah. They have Kyle Pitts, even to a degree, Darnell Mooney, Rondale Moore. They have people that the defenses have to respect. This should be a pass-heavier team. The Rams teams, the McVay teams, you think Zach Robinson will make sure that it's pass-heavy. But if the offense is scoring points, there's plenty of running opportunities. Yeah. And so that all works hand-in-hand together. And as you said, as a receiver, Bijan Robinson can run legit routes. He can catch off his frame. When the blitz is coming, what a great outlet he has. And I think Tyler Allgeier gets really pushed to the side this year. I do think Bijan Robinson gets a heavy, heavy workload. We saw with Kyren Williams, and he may not have had much competition, but Kyren Williams is getting over 20 touches a game. And hopefully Zach Robinson takes that model from McVay and utilizes, centers the offense, though, at least the rushing attack around Robinson. But yes, you could get him in the second half of the first round, maybe even late in the first round. And obviously I agree with you. CMC is still the number one running back, but on the table at any point after, you could say Breece Hall, like you said, you could say Saquon. Bijan is in that mix and very excited. The younger backs, they often tend to hold up better. It's not a hard and fast rule, but they tend to hold up a little bit better. All right, Jahmyr Gibbs is next. When we thought it was nuts that Atlanta used the 8th pick on a running back, the Lions doubled down and used the 12th pick on another running back. And look, whatever you think of it, it worked out for the most part for them. Now, could they have used other positions? Maybe. Now, Gibbs had his snaps limited during the first four games, very low, and David Montgomery was seeing a majority of the work. And then Gibbs missed weeks five and six. After that, Gibbs became a major part of the Lions offense. During that time, he had at least 11 carries in all but two games, and he was targeted at least five times in five straight games. He became the true dual threat option. Now, after that stretch of those five games, though, all of a sudden, the last six games of the season, the Lions backed off on his targets. He was getting five a game. He went down to 19 targets in six games. That's three per game. So, again, a team like not figuring out. We saw that a lot with the rookie class last year. Coaches would be in, out, in. So that was interesting. But all that said, after what they learned about Gibbs, I do think it's reasonable to expect in year two, he'll get that 11 carries again, Montgomery's still there, that four targets or so a game, and that 15 touches for an explosive player like this, I think that's going to be a great opportunity. And his after the catch was not good last year, Anthony Cervino, but Jahmyr Gibbs, I think if the coaching staff figures out how to optimize him as a receiver, they can unlock a lot because they got him explosive as a runner, just not as a receiver, but we know it's there. What are your thoughts on Gibbs as he enters year two?
No, if you remember the first four games, like the first month of the season, if you were a Jahmyr Gibbs fantasy manager, you were probably trying to trade him. You were probably trying to sell him in Dynasty because, let's face it, David Montgomery looked good. After the Gibbs injury, he comes back week seven. It's like he was shot out of a cannon. I don't know if he needed those reps to get a little bit more acclimated to pro level. I don't know if the Lions needed to see those reps to give this guy the ball more. But from week 7 to 18, he had, I believe, six games with over 20 PPR points. This is the real deal here. He's with the right offense, the right pieces around him. I think there's enough to go around at the running back position to where you can start both Montgomery and Gibbs in your fantasy lineup. But if you're trying to draft the Lions running back with the ultimate ceiling, I mean, just look at what Gibbs did last season. We just talked about Bijan Robinson. He was the PPR RB9. Gibbs was the PPR RB10. He missed a couple games, conceding valuable touches to David Montgomery, and he still managed 16.1 fantasy points per game, which he was the RB8 in that category. Again, Bijan was about eight spots behind him. Pound for pound, it looks like Gibbs might be the best rookie back out of last year's class. I think that argument should probably be continued after this season once we see Bijan with the right personnel and the right coaching around him. But you can't deny what Gibbs brought to the table last year, and I think we only get better this upcoming season. And fantasy managers should not be scared off by David Montgomery anymore.
No, and we saw the snap share completely switch. Montgomery, I believe, yeah, top of my head was about 38-40% of the snaps in the second half of the season, whereas he was playing like 60% in the early part of the season. So that whole role changed. And like you mentioned, with Gibbs, if he's going to see those 15 to 17 touches a game as a runner and receiver, don't worry about the volume. It's really only the CMCs, the Kyren Williams, and maybe the Jonathan Taylors of the world. There could be a couple more that are seeing that level of volume. After that, the volume is lower, but the efficiency for Gibbs makes it so that he is a strong running back one worthy of his ADP, especially if you're waiting into that second round. And who knows, he could slip into the third in some, which is possible. But definitely take him at the value if you can. But he can return first round value for sure. Again, if they optimize him as a receiver. We're going to talk about more running backs after we take a short break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Zach Charbonnet is next. Zach Charbonnet was the 21st pick of the second round by the Seattle Seahawks last year. My initial post-draft thought was that it would be, okay, it would be Kenneth Walker's number one, but they had nobody on the depth chart. It was like DJ Dallas. That was it. And so Pete Carroll, the then coach, wanted to run the ball. And if they were to lose Kenneth Walker, they would lose their ability to run. I thought Charbonnet was insurance. Now, as the draft season went on, more people were thought, nope, it's 1A and 1B. And I got caught up in that buzz a little bit, and I wish I hadn't, because I think the initial thought was right. Charbonnet basically had a three-week stretch when Kenneth Walker was injured. He averaged 47 snaps. It was weeks 12 to 14. Charbonnet averaged 47 snaps. In those games, it was 3.2 yards per carry. That was it. Now, they did play some good run defenses in there, but it was 48 carries for 154 yards. It was not very impressive. When Kenneth Walker was healthy, Charbonnet would see about 5 carries and 2 targets. That was very minimal change of pace work. Now, if you look at Charbonnet's rookie numbers, you see 4.3 yards per carry. And you're like, oh, that really looks good. He was always effective on those few carries in a change of pace role because Walker is a speedier back, and it really worked out to his advantage. But the broken tackle rate for Charbonnet was horrible, 28th percentile, middle of the pack in yards after contact. To me, he's a nice pass protector. He's an ordinary running back, and he's a very good number two in an NFL offense. For fantasy, not overly excited unless he falls fairly far and I need running back depth. Anthony, thoughts on Zach Charbonnet?
I love Charbonnet coming out of college. I did not love the landing spot, and I wasn't particularly in love with what I saw last year in his rookie season with Walker in a lineup and without Walker in a lineup. Charbonnet is a handcuff right now in fantasy. Like, when I'm going into this draft season, and I get there's some differences, Carroll's gone, I'm not going to view Charbonnet as a guy who's going to all of a sudden command 40%, even 30% of that backfield. Kenneth Walker, I think he's the real deal, and as long as he stays healthy and upright, he's going to be the guy in Seattle, which means I'm going to draft Charbonnet maybe at a value if he falls, and he should, as a handcuff, but he's more of a, like you said, like a change of pace back. This is also a Seattle team. They're pretty loaded at wide receiver, and there's only one football to go around.
And right, and Zach Charbonnet is not going to be high in that pecking order for sure. And, you know, they cleared out their tight end room. Noah Fant has their kind of room to himself right now. And I'm not saying Noah Fant is going to be Superman, but if you make him the tight end with those receivers, yeah, don't be surprised if he gets 450 yards. That wouldn't be a surprise at all. Noah Fant still can play. It's just the situations have been horrible. And he has had a 3-man rotation with Seattle in the past, but we digress. But Zach Charbonnet, again, really just a change of pace guy, worth a lower fantasy pick for depth. If Walker misses time, he'll get volume, and there's always something to be said for that. Kendre Miller is the next player we'll talk about. He was taken with the 8th pick of the 3rd round by the New Orleans Saints. He had 41 carries on the season. He caught 10 passes as well. He played in 8 games. Well, he missed the first 2 games, and then it was a hamstring injury preseason. And then he had an ankle, and he missed 7 of the last 8 games. So it was really an incomplete season. Now, in the limited work he had, again, the 41 carries, broken tackle rate was excellent. 75th percentile, yards after contact, 80th percentile, small sample. We don't know how much of that's sticky because, again, 41 carries isn't a lot. A couple of big runs and all of a sudden you skew those numbers. But he did look good when he played. And all that said, his most extensive work, it came in 2 games that were nowhere close to each other, week 5 and week 18. Against New England, he was given 12 carries. It was only 37 yards, so 3 yards a carry, but he did catch 4 passes for 53, and that was very impressive. He played Atlanta in week 18 when, you know, there's nothing to play for the most part, and I think the Saints actually had a shot at the playoffs, but again, he had 13 carries for 73. That was impressive. 1 catch for 6. He did score a rushing touchdown. All that said, Kendre Miller, it was a lost season in many ways. Yeah. Alvin Kamara, still the lead running back. Nobody's questioning that for a minute, but he is getting older, and they may need to start limiting his work. Jamal Williams was the number 2. He was terrible. He fell off. He's 29 now, Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams may be close to done. And we know the coaches love his blocking and all the attention to detail. But right now, Kendre Miller very easily could move into that secondary role behind Kamara. And Kamara at this age, too, he could miss time. I think Kendre Miller is a value pick in drafts because I do expect him to jump Jamal Williams. What are your thoughts on Kendre Miller in year 2?
No, if Kendre can play, then he should and will jump Jamal Williams. What we've seen from Jamal Williams last year, and I was telling people, hey, stay away from this guy. You're drafting him, hoping you get what you got in Detroit, but a completely different situation from the offensive line to the OC to the quarterback, and he was going to be one of the biggest busts, and he was last season. I don't know how the Saints keep putting Jamal Williams on the football field if there's a more competent back in that backfield behind Kamara. And I do think Kendre Miller can get the job done. We haven't seen a lot of Kendre Miller because of that injury. I do like what we've seen from him, but this offseason is going to be big. Kendre Miller really has to step up with the reps that he receives in practice and in preseason games. I think he's going to have to play himself onto the football field. And if he does, who knows what happens? Like, Alvin Kamara, obviously, for fantasy football perspective, RB11 in PPR, but RB3 in fantasy points per game. It looks like he hasn't lost a step, but a lot of those PPR points, he had 75 receptions. That's like old Alvin Kamara, his most receptions since 2020. So that's like a little bit of a farce, because if he loses out on those target opportunities, Kamara probably wasn't as good as his fantasy finish. He was a 45th running back in terms of true yards per carry and 37th in terms of yards per touch. This isn't Kamara 5 years ago. I think this is a player on the decline, and who knows, this backfield could be wide open as soon as this season if Kamara takes another step back.
Very possible. And remember, Derek Carr, look, would say whatever. He doesn't like pressure. When pressure's coming, oh, I got to dump off to Kamara. And there was a game, he had double-digit catches against Atlanta. And now it might have been like 15. Yeah. Top of my head was close. It was just catch after catch. That was the PPR special. The yards weren't great, but man, he crushed for fantasy. So all that said, yes, he is in decline. We didn't really see it from a fantasy perspective, but he is. And there could be more for Kendre Miller than we thought. So again, he is a player to target because there is plenty of opportunity for him to make a meteoric rise this year, and not many people are looking for that. Tyjae Spears is our next running back. He was taken with the 18th pick of the third round by the Tennessee Titans, and wow. Now, first, I'm going to say this and get this off my chest. I talk about it all the time. When you're a change of pace back in the NFL and you have a great lead back, you have a massive advantage. We know that Derrick Henry was splitting almost equal snaps with Spears, but Henry plays at Henry's speed and the defense played at that speed. Tyjae Spears came in and he was a lightning bolt. 91st percentile, 80th percentile broken tackle rate, 71st in yards after contact. He was very, very good, but defenses were definitely playing at Henry's speed. Now, I'm not saying that's a knock on Spears, because Spears looked exceptional and he may continue to be that way. He had 838 scrimmage yards on only 152 touches. This guy was electric. Here's my problem. No longer Derrick Henry setting the pace. They bring in Tony Pollard. And I really feel, Anthony Servino, like Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears are similar players. They're faster players. They're good receivers. They would both best be served to be the speed option in a backfield. And I really don't know how the touches get divvied up, because it's not like they paid Pollard the amount of money where it's like, we have to play him all the time. Yeah. Spears is a third round draft investment. They have definitely heavily invested in him as well. And I could see this being a complete split. I could see it being a hot hand from day to day, from week to week, from month to month. And it could be very problematic. I'm excited about Tyjae Spears, but I'm nervous because of that backfield makeup. What are your thoughts on Tyjae Spears?
You said all the right things, but the whole Tony Pollard dish, and I said it when we reacted to this on a free agent show. I don't know how to feel about this backfield. I don't know how to dissect this backfield. This is going to be one of those situations where I might just draft a cheaper running back because they could both be used in a similar role. We could see the hot hand approach. To me, like, nothing good comes out of this. Like, even Tony Pollard, when you talk about how Spears benefited from Derrick Henry, well, Pollard benefited from Zeke, and we saw what Pollard turned into when he was the main guy, which is why whatever the beat reporters or whatever the preseason touches, whatever we get to dig into, whoever the lead back is, give me the change of pace get back, because he'll probably be cheaper in fantasy drafts and he might be just as effective.
And that's going to be the conundrum all summer, how to value both of these Tennessee backs. Either could pop, both could limit each other. There's a lot of variables. I am probably, even if one's, I mean, obviously Spears would be cheaper, I'm probably more likely than not to stay away. Spears will be aggressively drafted enough that he'll be higher than the value I think he has going into the season. Love the player. I think he has a lot of potential. But again, bad situation. I just don't know what to do with it. Devon Achan is next. He was taken with the 21st pick of the third round. And look, we all remember weeks 2 through 4. And some people may have benched him in week 2 because he only had like 5 yards in week 1. Yeah. And he had 51 fantasy points in week 2, and he was on a lot of benches. But in the even in the week 3 and week 4, 27, 23 PPR points. That was a run we very seldom see in fantasy football. Now, during that stretch of 3 games for Devon Achan, 455 yards and 5 touchdowns, 12.6 yards per carry. And then Achan missed 5 of 6 games between week 6 and 12. He comes back in week 13. Now, two things. The offense of the Dolphins had been largely figured out. Teams were stealing their concepts. They knew how to defend them. The Dolphins were no longer dropping 70 on the Broncos. That those days were gone. So in Achan, his last 7 games, which includes the playoff game against Kansas City, 4.97 yards per carry. Still very good, but it's not 12 yards per carry like he had. And after 2 rushing touchdowns in week 13, Achan had 1 in his last 6 games. Now, all that said, he's 5'9", 188. He's going to be a rotational back. Mostert is still there. Devon Achan is, in my opinion, we are not going to see that week 2 through 4 back. I think that set of 3 weeks is going to drive his fantasy value higher than it should be. I think he's a very good back. I think with a rotational role, he could flirt for RB12 value. But I think people are going to see more than that, and I'm not willing to pop the draft cost on him. What are your thoughts on Devon Achan?
I'm an Achan guy. I was an Achan guy as soon as I saw he was going to Miami. I loved the role. I was still drafting him as his ADP went in the wrong direction because of an erratic offseason, some injuries, and the crowded backfield. And then we saw the magic happen. However, the one recurring part of Devon Achan's season are the injuries. Normally in fantasy, the community, they'll fade a player like Achan, but I think they're blinded by these big pop games because right now he's the RB7 in the fantasy pros consensus. Are we willing to pay 7th running back off the board for a guy that we believe is going to be a rotational player? Because if he's given that full workload, can his body handle it? That's a big price to pay. And again, I'm a big time Achan guy. I just don't know if I'm willing to pay his cost. I mean, current ADP, he's going ahead of Saquon. That's obviously going to change, but that's just how Maybe. This guy's valued right now. And I just don't know if I can do it.
I'm telling you, people are going to remember that 50-point game, and they're not going to get out of it. And that's why he's going that high. People remember that run and think, oh, this is who he is. Like I said, that offense was running perfectly at that time. All right, this will be a quick one. Tank Bigsby, 25th pick of the third round. Basically, couldn't break tackles, couldn't get yards after contact. They tried him early in the season, quickly moved him to the side. D'Ernest Johnson kind of took the secondary role. Does he have any chance of reemerging as the number 2, or is he just kind of a backup guy for NFL purposes for his career?
He's probably just a guy right now. For him to maintain or regain any fantasy relevance, he's going to have to not only see the field, but he's going to have to be productive on the field. And I don't know if there's a path for him to do so. The second best running back on that team at times was D'Ernest Johnson. I don't even know if that's saying much.
No, not at all. So basically Tank, Tank Bigsby, yeah, probably undraftable. Not going to draft him. Yeah. Not even thinking about him. If it works out, great. A few notables after the third round. Roschon Johnson, 4th round, 13th pick. I had said all preseason, look, it's a good pass protector, probably end up being a great special teams player at some point in his career. As a runner, he was terrible. 12th percentile broken tackle rate, 23rd percentile yards after contact. He was a big guy that could bully kids in college. That was never going to work for him in the NFL. Can he do a little bit as a receiver? Yes. And he did have 4.3 yards per carry, but it was mostly what was blocked from. He got what was blocked. He was somebody who's on passing downs. Defense was in dime, got a couple handoffs, got a few yards. I just think he might see some pass protection work. I don't think he's going to be more than a rotational guy, slight rotational guy. And again, I think he eventually becomes a special teamer. Thoughts on Roschon Johnson?
You know, Roschon is actually polarizing in the fantasy world because people are either all in and think, hey, once he gets his shot, watch out. You know, he was behind Bijan, never really got that opportunity, or they're all out. I feel like if the Bears believe they had the second coming or anything close, why are you going out and bringing in DeAndre Swift when you already have Khalil Herbert in the lineup? So that really does tell me that they don't really trust their running back room.
All right, let's go to Chase Brown. He was with the 28th pick of the fifth round by the Cincinnati Bengals. He was one of my favorite pre-draft guys. And there was a point last year where we thought Joe Mixon was going to get let go, and I was bullish on Chase Brown, thinking we had a steal. Well, Joe Mixon got that two-year deal. Obviously, now he's no longer with the team. But that said, Chase Brown, for what he did, very impressive. A 95th percentile broken tackle rate, 100th percentile yards after contact. It was only 44 carries. Again, small sample size, one or two big runs, that skews that. So, okay, so we're not saying he's not Superman, but he is a solid NFL running back, and he's a good receiver as well. Now, we began to see him play in week 13, and he had between 5 and 12 touches in the last seven games. So he was a backup to Joe Mixon for sure. And in those last five games, he never surpassed 4 yards per carry in any game. He had 2 to 3 catches in weeks 14 to 17, all those, and 23 yards in the majority of those games. Otherwise, he's 5'9", 215. I don't think he's undersized like people are selling him as. At 215, that's a fairly stout size. I think that if Zach Moss is ordinary, as I think he ended up will be, that drop in line play from Indy to Cincinnati is significant. I think Chase Brown is going to cut into some of Zach Moss's early down work as a change of pace, but I think Brown is going to be a receiving back. I think with Joe Burrow being able to throw the ball to his backs, as he had to Joe Mixon for years, and having Jamar Chase to open up the defense, I do think Chase Brown is going to have a productive season, and I do think he takes away more work, as I said, from Zach Moss than many think. Thoughts on Chase Brown?
You know, Moss is being paid backup running back money. Chase Brown, we saw him flash a little bit last year with and behind Joe Mixon, but he wasn't, oh my God,
right,
once this guy gets a shot. But look, Mixon's gone. I'm with you on Moss. He's probably going to take a little bit of a step back. Possibly, I don't know if he's going to be as bad as he was when we saw him in Buffalo, but we're certainly not going to get the player that we saw in Cincinnati. Chase Brown's going to be one of those running backs. He's a dart throw. Might be a little bit more expensive than your typical 14 round and beyond dart throw. Like, you're going to pay some decent capital for this guy. But look what guys like Rashad White, he wasn't that expensive last year compared to what we had, or he's going to be Alexander Mattison, a complete flop. I do think the volume will eventually get there. And if he gets enough targets and receptions, he's going to be a solid pick where his current ADP is.
All right, that's it. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Anthony and I will be back next week. Remember to give Anthony a follow at The Real NFL Guru, and you can find me over at Jim Coventry NFL.